You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. 1 or 2 degrees of Dan Inosanto, Part 1. The title of today's podcast was inspired by the popular game 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. For those of you who have lived under a rock since the 1980s, or are younger than 25, the game capitalizes on the fact that the actor, Kevin Bacon, appeared in lots of movies with lots of different actors. The object of the game is to connect Mr. Bacon with any other actor in 6 steps or less by naming a series of movies in each of which appeared 2 actors in the chain of connection. In today's podcast, I draw a parallel to this game with the life of my teacher and martial arts mentor, Daniel Arca Inosanto. I have never met anyone who has crossed paths with, trained under, or taught more amazing human beings than Mr. Inosanto. Before I begin, let me clarify something. I'm going to name a great many high-level martial artists from a great many systems. They each have earned titles, but I'm going to dispense with all of them and use only first names, or last names, with the title Mr. or Ms. This is because which title I use can sometimes be a source of contention among martial artists. So to avoid snarky comments like, "Master Squiggy's title is not Exalted Poobah, it's Supreme Exalted Poobah," I will dispense with all titles. Let's start at the beginning. Mr. Inosanto's parents were the first phenomenal people in his life. His father, Sebastian, was born in the Philippines on the island of Samar. In 1902, when Sebastian was a young boy, war was raging on Samar. The United States had purchased the Philippine Islands from Spain a few years before as part of the peace treaty that ended the Spanish-American War. Spain had already been fighting against native Filipino rebels who were fighting for their independence when war broke out between Spain and the U.S. The rebels were led to believe by an American military official that the U.S. would grant them independence after an American victory. As a result, the rebels threw in with the Americans, and the Spanish were quickly defeated. But as it turned out, the American military official who had promised independence had no official authority to make that promise. The U.S. purchased the Philippines as part of the peace treaty with Spain, and that was that. The Filipino freedom fighters weren't any happier at the prospect of American rulers than they had been with almost 4 centuries of Spanish rule. So the rebels went to war with the U.S. occupation troops. This war, the Philippine-American War, is not generally taught in history classes in the U.S., and I plan to cover it in more detail in a future podcast. Back on Sebastian Inosanto's home island of Samar, 51 American soldiers were killed in an ambush by Filipino rebels. The American general in command of the island, Jacob Smith, ordered that all of the inhabitants of the island old enough to wield a bolo, a common bladed Filipino weapon, were to be killed, and all of the towns and villages burned. The general was asked by a subordinate officer to clarify how old a native had to be to wield a bolo. 10 years old, was the reply. Yes, you heard right. An American general gave that order, and it was carried out. Soldiers and Marines killed thousands as a result. I was recently having breakfast with Mr. Inosanto, and I brought up the subject of this event. He looked at me across the table and said softly, "My father was just young enough to avoid being killed." Wow. If you were aware of the huge effect his son Dan had on the martial arts, imagine how different many of our lives would be if Sebastian Inosanto had not survived. Anyway, he did survive. The war eventually ended, and Sebastian grew into a man who later emigrated to the U.S., where he became a very important person in the Filipino immigrant community in California, acting as secretary-treasurer of said community. Sebastian spoke fluent Spanish and English, had a functional knowledge of Chinese, and spoke 12, count 'em, 12 distinct Filipino dialects. This linguistic knowledge, along with considerable patience and diplomatic skill, was instrumental in assisting hundreds of immigrant families from a variety of Filipino ethnicities to find lodging and work in this strange new country. There is still today a certain amount of friction between many of the various tribes and ethnicities native to the Philippines, and those feelings burned much hotter in the first half of the 20th century in the immigrant camps of California. At that time, most Filipinos didn't think of themselves as Filipinos, but as Visayans, Tagalogs, Ilocanos, Waray-Waray, or whatever other ethnic group which they were. It was years later, when Filipinos threw in together to fight the Japanese in World War II, that a true feeling of being Filipino strongly developed. World War II, and especially the actions of American forces led by General Douglas MacArthur, also went a long way towards healing the bitter feelings of many Filipinos towards the U.S. after the Filipino-American War. Back in California, organizing immigrant camps, knowing not to place a group from Tribe A near a group from traditionally enemy Tribe B was just one benefit derived from Sebastian's skill set. He knew who hated whom and where all the bodies were buried. Sebastian's efforts in turn led to lots of Filipino immigrants who felt personally grateful to him, a fact which was to pay off for Dan Inosanto in the future. Among the many gifts Dan seems to have inherited from his father was this talent for diplomacy. As many of you know, the martial arts community is rife with huge egos and political conflict, ranging from rivalry and backbiting, all the way to full-on, I challenge you to a death match, virulent hatred. With that in mind, Dan Inosanto has managed to navigate the minefield of inflated martial arts egos with an astonishing minimum of ruffled feathers. Over and over again, he has trained separately and extensively under two different masters, who each eventually gave him permission to teach their art, but who each also stubbornly would refuse to be in the same room together. He has also used his status in the martial arts industry to help promote many now well-known martial arts and artists from a variety of countries and cultures, who might otherwise have labored in obscurity for many more years. He has made careers for many other martial artists and many real friendships while making very few enemies. How many of the rest of us in the martial arts can say either of those things? His humble, almost meek demeanor has allowed him to mine all of these dangerous sources with very little of the politics affecting him. Dan's mother, Mary Inosanto, was also extremely intelligent, graduating as the valedictorian of her high school class at the age of 15. After she had raised her children, in her 40s, she decided to go to college and get a degree, which she managed to do in just 2.5 years. And this was in the days before associate degrees. Dan has fond memories of his mother holding a college textbook in one hand, studying, while holding a rattan training stick in the other, feeding attacks to him so he could practice. Mary's father, Pepe Arca, served in the Filipino Constabulary. This was an elite Filipino paramilitary police force, not unlike the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, which was used to pacify the islands, fighting Muslim insurgents in the south after the end of the Philippine-American War. The constabulary was made up of Filipino troops and American or white European mercenary officers. While American troops stayed safely in their barracks, the troopers of the constabulary continued to fight for years in the Muslim South. They fought well and bravely in what became the first modern guerrilla war. At the home of Sebastian and Mary Inosanto in Stockton, California, many of the immigrant men who owed favors to them were frequently around their household. And Dan, as was Filipino custom with male friends of the family, referred affectionately to many of them as uncle. He once proudly said to me that he grew up with dozens of uncles. One of them, Uncle Vincent Evangelista, was Dan's first martial arts instructor. Vincent was a Filipino martial arts practitioner who had served as a hand-to-hand instructor for the U.S. Army Rangers. The lessons he gave young Dan were the basics of Okinawa Te and Jiu-Jitsu. As Dan grew older, he went on to play football and run track, both in high school and college. In high school football, his normal position was running back, but he also served as kicker. One day, his coach introduced him to a dignified, patrician-looking elderly man in his 90s and told him to listen to the man's instructions on the art of kicking a football. This elderly man coached young Dan in the art of kicking field goals for an entire season. It was only later that Dan came to find out that his old kicking coach was famous. He was none other than Amos Alonzo Stagg. To get the full story on Coach Stagg, you should try Googling his name. I'll furnish some highlights. Amos Alonzo Stagg was a pioneer of organized American sports. Among his accomplishments were, in sports in general, he invented the concept of putting numbers on players' uniforms, making coaching and officiating more efficient. In basketball, he standardized the size of a team at 5 players. In baseball, he invented the batting cage. In football, he created the lateral pass, helped to create the forward pass, he created the man in motion and the linebacker position, and many other innovations. In track and field, he served as a coach for the U.S. Olympic team in Paris in 1924. Schools, trophies, and stadiums all over the U.S. are named after Mr. Stagg. As a science nerd, I especially like the following indirect connection to Coach Stagg. The first controlled, sustaining atomic chain reaction in history was secretly conducted by scientists of the Manhattan Project in 1942 at the University of Chicago in a secret chamber concealed beneath the stands of Stagg Field, named for Coach Stagg. And here he was in his 90s, coaching young Dan Inosanto. In an athletic life where Dan took coaching from world-class teachers like Bruce Lee, Ed Parker, John LaCosta, Surachai Sirisut, Yori Nakamura, Herman Sawanda, Hagen Machado, and Pavel Tsatsouline, Coach Stagg could reasonably be said to be Dan's first world-class teacher. After college, Dan joined the U.S. Army, becoming a paratrooper in the legendary 101st Airborne Division, the Screaming Eagles, stationed at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. By coincidence, as my future teacher was beginning his paratrooper training, I was beginning life as a baby in my hometown of Evansville, Indiana, a mere one-hour drive north of Fort Campbell. While there, Dan met the next amazing individual in his life, Hank Slomanski. Slomanski was a decorated war hero, the holder of 3 Purple Hearts, a Bronze Star, and a Silver Star. That's a chestful. Hank was also a highly skilled black belt practitioner of Chito Ryu Karate in the mid-50s, when American black belts were as rare as hen's teeth. At Fort Campbell, martial arts activities from a number of styles under a variety of instructors were coordinated by Slomanski, who dominated sparring matches among all of them. Several years before, Hank had won the title of champion of the Japan Karate Association in Japan, a stunning and unheard-of feat for a non-Japanese, non-Asian competitor. Dan trained several times a week in Slomanski's classes. The training ranged from Spartan to rugged to brutal. Mr. Inosanto has spoken to me more than once in glowing terms of what a shame it is that so many people have never heard of Hank Slomanski, and that he was among the finest martial artists he had ever known. And that, dear listener, is august company indeed. Shortly before leaving Fort Campbell, Dan also briefly trained with a practitioner of Kempo, and was impressed with the speedy, fluid motion of this art. He decided to seek further Kempo training in the future. That future happened after being discharged from the Army. Once a civilian, Dan secured a job teaching school in Los Angeles. He searched for Kempo training there and found it at the Academy of American Martial Arts pioneer, Ed Parker, known as the father of American karate. Coincidentally, both Hank Slomanski from Fort Campbell and Ed Parker also trained pop megastar Elvis Presley. Over time, Dan earned a black belt under Mr. Parker and began teaching for him. One of Dan's students, Larry Hartzell, went on to become his lifelong friend and a legendary instructor himself. Mr. Hartzell lived an eventful young adult life, serving in the military police in wartime Saigon in Vietnam, and later working as a bouncer and bodyguard back in the U.S. Hollywood rumor has it that Mr. Hartzell's exploits as a bouncer were the inspiration for the movie Roadhouse. I'm fortunate to have spent some time training under Mr. Hartzell and was honored to serve as his demonstrating assistant at a number of seminars. That ends part one of the story. Next week, part two of 1 or 2 Degrees of Dan Inosanto. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.